post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome back to the Near Post. I'm Russ Gibbs. You're listening to the local show. Joining me this evening is Pete Fennell. How are you today, Pete?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks. Coming up, we've got some news and some results and an interview with George Hoekstra. Is that pronounced correctly? So a big interview with him coming up. But first off, we'll start very quickly then with some news. We'll just rip through a couple of quick ones. We've got an important announcement to make here. The ACT Association for Advancing Disabled Support and Recreation, Inc. have a guest speaker of Laurie McKenna at the Football Celebrities Lunch. Let's have a quick look when this is. Is there a date on this, Eamon? Doesn't seem to be. Can't see one. Oh, here we go. Friday, July the 10th. Kickoff at 12 noon for 12:30. Three-course luncheon, $75. Per person, so that'd be interesting. Get yourself across there. What happened on the weekend? Got any news for me, Pete?
Well, I'm interested in that Tuggeranong Belconnen result. The Belconnen have paid a very heavy price for their meltdown game the week before, and I guess from a coach's point of view, he's thinking about the next 3 weeks that he hasn't got his couple of his key players. So that was a nil-all result there. The women's league. You've got the women's league there, mate. There's one really good result there.
I do. Canberra FC, our team on the near post, got up on the weekend beating Belconnen United by 1-0, which is a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
Indeed. And Woden Valley continue on their merry way with a 6-0 win over ANU. So they look the form team for sure.
They certainly do. The other results in the women's team, Bell West beat Western Creek by 4-1. And in the men's league, the other results, O'Connor 2, ANU 0, Canberra City beating Woden Valley 3-0, and Canberra City cruising to a 7-0 victory over Queanbeyan City, as expected, I suspect.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One result that I thought was interesting, down in the Premier League 16s, Canberra City Madura team nailed Woden Valley. That came as a surprise to Woden Valley. Didn't seem to come as a surprise to Canberra City. They played really good football. Downside, the field conditions are awful, and I have to say that the grounds are really starting to fall apart.
And not very good grounds there. Did you get out to any games on the weekend, Pete?
Yeah, I went to that one. I caught up with a couple of junior games down at Woden Valley and of course, the Premier League game, which I'm obliged to be at for Woden. We did not have a lot of fun on the weekend, it has to be said.
Yeah, we're losing 3-0 to Canberra City, a bit of a surprise for you guys.
Yes, it was, and we didn't do well in the pathways. Our Premier League 18s are very good. But it highlighted a point at the 18s level, and you see it to a lesser degree in the 16s. The 18s level, clearly there are some clubs who've got the juniors and others who are really struggling. And that might be an issue for them when licences come up.
Talking to players struggling, I heard a rumour on the weekend that the O'Connor Knights, prior to their match with ANU, only had 9 players in the changing room prior to kick-off, and they had to do a very quick call-around to see who they could get. They were picking up players, trying to call people in their State League Division 3, 5, 6, whoever could come over, just to fill up the numbers for their Premier League team, which is a bit worrying for them.
That's dreadful. No, I have to say, We've encountered teams in the course of the competition that have been in those circumstances. It becomes particularly evident at the 18s level. That's when you first see it. And then there's usually a mad scramble as it goes forward. Pathways often suffer.
Certainly do. And we're looking at the league table. Canberra FC, from 8 matches, still maintain their 2-point advantage over Belconnen United after that surprise 0-0 draw with Tuggeranong on the weekend. ANU sitting in third on 14 points. And then there's a bit of a logjam. Canberra Olympic, Canberra City and the O'Connor Knights all on 11, with Tuggeranong on 8 and Queanbeyan on 6. Still not out of it. And Woden bringing up the rear on 5 points. Have you got a women's league table over there, Pete?
Yes. A women's league table? Yes, mate. Sorry. I was following yours. Well, Woden Valley, Bell West Foxes second, Belconnen United and Canberra FC. Western Creek still poised, but look, the standouts are Woden Valley and Bell West Foxes at the moment.
They certainly are, and they both got up again on the weekend. Leading goal scorers?
In the Women's League, Grace Field from Woden Valley on 7 and Jessica O'Brien from Bell West Foxes on 6. The situation of the Golden Boot is changing as we speak, as they say in the Premier League. Leite hasn't improved on his score of 16. Very impressive score.
Gutted for him.
That's right. However, John Glass from Canberra FC has crept up to 8, and he is doing very nicely, thank you.
So. Yeah, he bagged a hat-trick on the weekend. He usually plays at the back. Whether or not they've decided to push him further forward, I'm not sure. He got a hat-trick this week, a brace last week in the 2-0 win over Belconnen. Any idea if they're pushing him forward this, or whether he's just going up for corners?
You read my mind. How did he come to be scoring all the goals? Probably says a bit about the quality of their play.
It certainly does. And, of course, on the weekend there was a comeback goal for Paul Ivanich as well, off the bench, his first goal back since his accident pre-season. So that's nice to see. Dom Giampaolo, Adam Spalletta and Elliot Swangabani scoring the other goals for Canberra FC in their 7-0 win. A couple of other bits of local news. Mark Schwarzer is in town at the moment, right as we speak, in fact, at the Hellenic Club. He was there at 6:30 signing copies of Meg's and the Complete Left Foot, the fourth book in the Meg series. Anybody read that? Have you read any of his books yet?
No.
Aaron, you're still sat here. Have you read any of Schwartz's books?
No, I haven't, but it's on my must-to-do list.
Yeah, we must get down and have a read of the Mark Schwartz books, and I'm sure that Eamon's got them all.
Is it an audio book?
The ACT Presence 11 have started training last week for their clash with the Central Coast Mariners at the AIS Fields coming up soon. The synthetic turf is being laid at Hawker as we speak as well, which should be completed very soon for the opening of that on the 1st and 2nd of August. And Ray Junior was out scouting for players for Canberra United Season 2 of the W League on the weekend, having a look at the Women's Premier League. So that's all pretty interesting. So we're going to have an interview in just a second. I'd like to introduce us to who you've been speaking to this week, Pete.
Yes, George Hoitker is the Director of Co-Curricular at Radford. This is a really interesting bloke. The intro I give him will say more detail. We've done two interviews with him. One is his thoughts on junior football, which we're not playing tonight. But the other interview is, if you like, the journey of the talented player through his eyes. It's in two parts. Part one about to come up. And he's got some definite views on the talented player and the price one might pay if you think you got it one.
Okay, so let's have a listen and hear what George had to say.
We're on. Okay, we're live again. Right, speaking to George Hoitker, teacher, poet, actor, writer and director of co-curricular at Radford, we're going to talk this time about the talented young player, in inverted commas. How do you get them, where do they come from and where do they go to? And perhaps in between, what do you do with them when you reckon you've got one? The ages I'm talking about are from the age of 10 to 18. All of the heat and the intensity about talented players seems to occur in the junior lower end of youth, at least most of it anyway. And of course, it's characterised by high levels of parental involvement and concern and everything that might or might not go with that. So, bearing in mind that we've just got a new national curriculum about to launch on us from the FFA, who talk about the two streams of football. One is the talented stream, in inverted commas, and the other is the community stream. We're now looking at the talented stream, which is realistically the most minor percentage of the total football players, male and female. What is a talented junior player, George?
It's a tough question. Firstly, can I just say I'm really thrilled to hear that they've actually noticed that there are two streams, because you could be forgiven for thinking that there was no such thing. Yes. So I actually think that the FFA need a thumbs up for actually acknowledging the fact that there's two avenues of people that are playing, probably 99% of which are in the other stream. So the elite stream's a very, very small one, isn't it? I guess is where I'd like to start. And before you'd want to identify a kid as going for a swim in that one, you'd want to be really, really sure about what you're doing. And unfortunately, when you're looking at issues such as talent, you got to make sure that you get it right. you got to say the right things. You got to choose the right pathways, the right mentors. I'm not sure the question's an easy one to answer, because you can have kids that bloom late in life, and then it takes a very, very special sports professional to be able to, I think, really, really identify the skills that will allow them to make a living in a certain sport. If you're talking about just at the representative level, junior sports, nearly every sport that exists out there has got that sort of strain. I guess you're looking for a kid. I would like to think that you're looking for a kid that loves his sport and is willing to still have that love and enjoyment and passion and intensity past all of the things that you're about to ask them to sacrifice.
Yes.
So that might be my answer. It's something a little bit away from technical skill. Is the kid still going to say after they're training 5 days a week that they still love the game and they want to get even more of it? They live and breathe it.
Yep. And there really is a difference here, isn't it? You're touching on that importantly, I think, that if we're talking about that talented player stream, we are talking about going from children who want to represent their region, their state or territory, maybe through to Australian representative. So they want to really play good football. But this thing morphs after a while, and then becomes, do I want to be a professional footballer? Just exactly when that happens is not clear to me.
Yeah, I like the way you've said that. I think, you know, having been in that boat myself when I was a youngster, you always like to play to the best of your ability. And sometimes that is at a rep level, but you're right. It gets to a point then where you think about, do you want to make a living out of it? And that's when things are getting really, really quite serious. And I think people need to be very, very careful about the choices that they make, because there can be a lot of regret in this life. And I feel very, very sorry for the person that's given up their entire childhood for this sort of like perceived endpoint of being a professional footballer, and then they're looking back going, oh god, I could have I could have smelled the roses, I could have done this and that and all, etc. So what point is that? I don't know. They're telling us it's a lot earlier, aren't they, Peter? They're saying it has to happen earlier, and I just have to say, I'll put myself out on a limb that I don't like that at all. I don't like the thought of a kid at being told at 12, well, you're the next best thing, so we're going to prepare you and groom you for a career in football.
Well, I recently went and watched the under-13 boys' nationals in Canberra, and there was some spectacular football on display there. I thought it was unfortunate, and this will be unpopular, but I thought it was unfortunate they had to go and pick an Australian under-13 team. Couldn't they just have left it?
Oh, God's sake. Look, get every single person that's on that selection panel and slap them. Okay? Slap them with a fish. Okay? They are probably wannabe people themselves that have never made an Australian team and never will. Okay, that are thinking that they've got some sort of, oh, that really makes me angry, actually, that some sort of like power over choosing an under 13 Australia. Look, all of you selector guys are doing that. Go get a life. It's irrelevant at that age group that they get identified for that. I almost think it's almost irrelevant that there's state teams at that level.
Mm.
You have a look at the kids that are playing in the under-13 rep level, and then compare it 5 years later with the names on the lists for the 18s. Yeah.
There's a lot of growing between 13 and 16.
And if it's exactly the same, I'll eat my words.
We just got interrupted by a telephone call there, but George is sitting here amongst hundreds of children around their school and plenty of staff, so we've dodged a bullet there, George.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it was powers of being telling me to slow down. I was in a rant.
Well, stoke the fire again, mate.
Okay.
We're talking about under-13s.
Yes. What I was saying is, have a look at the teams at the rep teams at the 13s level, and compare them to where they are at the under-18s. And if the names are exactly the same, then maybe you've got some reason to talent identify. Another fact that just popped into my head was, if you have a look at the kids that are playing in the Joeys that eventually go on to play in the Socceroos, I think you'll find that the exact same thing occurs. That there's very, except for a very, very small percentage, it's not the same names. And so talent identification really needs to stop taking itself seriously and look at itself a little bit more carefully, because, you know, you're responsible for what you sow. And in some cases, I think you're sowing some very, very dangerous seeds in the minds of young players and parents.
And that thinking infiltrates into that other stream of community football and drives parents and players to behave and move in ways that they might not otherwise do. It must rob them. I think it robs clubs and teams and players, parents, of a lot of enjoyment.
Yes, I agree. I feel sorry for those kids. Can I get back to the Australian under 13?
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel sorry for every kid represented on that. They have to carry that sort of like subjective stigma that some adults put onto them. Yeah, sure, it's an honour, but it's a dubious one.
Mm.
Okay, and it's going to send the wrong messages out. A lot happens from the age of 13 through to 18, and I pity the kid that is being told at 13 they're going to be a socceroo and future professional star.
Well, indeed.
Because that's got to be the expectation with being named in an Australian under 13 side.
Well, it's a notion that'll seduce a lot of children and parents, and will decisively influence the decisions they make far too early.
I agree.
Look, I'm sitting in your office, and you pointed out the school photo here, and it aligns with the question we did in our first interview. Of all the thousands of students that you've seen come through here in 20 years, and many thousands of football players, how many would sit in, how many real, in a general sense, male and female, would sit inside that talented nation that the FFA now pursue?
One of each gender. And we're talking about 21 years of hundreds of footballers passing through my, a little Radford football gates.
Well, 18 teams, 20 teams every year.
Yeah, it's probably more than that.
Yeah, of course it would be, yeah.
Yeah, and it's, you've got to keep that statistic in mind. But the problem is, We're often dealing not only with parents that are living vicariously, but you can also be dealing with coaches that are.
Yes.
And the weight of expectation, like we've got a soccer full moon howling. Watch the werewolves come out now, because we're in the World Cup.
Mm.
Okay, the avenue through to the pinnacle is, what would you say, is a clearer one.
Mm.
There is an end point. Watch out, because it just gets onto everybody's ambitions, everybody's dreams, and look, I used to be a person that think obviously ambitions and dreams are a really, really important thing, okay, but if they become so consuming that you're missing all the significant reality checks that occur along the way, and they're evident every time you step field on a junior onto a junior field on the weekend, then you know, look, God help us.
Can I ask you? It's a loaded question, mate. How many? You're amongst these young people all the time. How many really want to be that at that top end? How many really want that? How many, as opposed to just wanting to play good football and maybe doing some sort of representative thing? How many really want the whole deal?
Well, the stats would be a little bit higher than the ones I just mentioned. But kids also have an ingrown reality check machine themselves in their hearts and in their soul. And there's a difference between really, really wanting something and knowing the reality of the situation. So I would say a lot of kids want it, but they don't know what it takes to get to that height.
Mm.
And a lot of them think it's something that comes easily, when it doesn't. Our superstars, it's very rare, have Cinderella stories. The truth of the matter is that they've given up significant portions of their lives for this thing that they love. Mm. They've trained hard. They've sacrificed everything from friendships to relationships to, to their childhood.
Yes.
And that's the price that they've been willing to pay to have a chance at the top flight.
Mm-hmm.
No, nobody wants that.
No, indeed.
A handful of people do, and are often disappointed.
And all the more reason, I would think, that they need good advice early and along the way. And parents need good advice too. I mean, you can't know everything.
Yeah, unfortunately, you can't tell all parents. To be a parent is to be... you still got to be... You sometimes are a little bit clouded to the things that you want your children to be. And that's normal. That's human nature. Yep,
it is. Moving along, how, in terms of where you sit here, how do you identify talent in the football sphere?
Oh, you know, this thing they call flair, sparkle. You see that sort of like... you can sense that something's coming very, very naturally to a young athlete and to a performer. That's not to say you can't work really hard to achieve your goals, whatever they may be in life, but I look for that sparkle. Mm-hmm. And it exists, but it doesn't come all that often.
Right. When you do see it and identify it and you confirm it in your own mind, how do you nurture and develop and motivate a talented player? Are there any gender differences there too?
Well, that's a good question. Often I find that it's probably beyond you. To be honest, the thing that the nurture and all of that sort of stuff that you're talking about is something that's probably beyond your capability if you've got a truly talented player that you think will make it on the really big stage. So I guess my answer is a little bit of a cop out. It's saying you have to find the people with better expertise than you have, and you have to be able to admit that you do not have them to allow a kid to actually grow. But I would do all that I could to make sure that the kid kept the sparkle, because there's something really, really positive in that sort of word and that image and that sort of idea. And it can get doused by by expectation and negative experiences. And
for those players that do step forward in this way, there's a lot of personal courage involved, isn't there?
Yeah. Yes, because often you'll have to move clubs, you'll have to move context, you have to move away from your friends, I think, is the major thing, isn't it? And that's a big step to take.
It is. It is. Just as a small under 11 will take all season to do his favourite move that one of his stars on TV does, that was his shining moment of the season. In the same sense, the talented player has to internalise a lot of things early. I wonder how that courage is sustained, because I don't think courage is necessarily a bowl that is automatically refilled after each appearance.
I have to be honest, I have no idea either. I wouldn't be able to really answer that, because otherwise I would be a coach of champions, and I'm not that. I don't know.
Right. Now, again, reflecting on the school context here, and I ask you to weigh in as a teacher, or at least come from that point of the compass, you can see talented player. How do you get a balance between football, school and everything else? And where does a parent fit into this equation?
Well, that's... I think a parent should be one of the people that is obviously monitoring for balance or imbalance with their kids' lives. But it normally manifests itself in how the kid plays. And I go back to this whole notion of having spark and having sparkle. You can see in a young athlete or a young player when that is not there. And often when it's not there, there's an imbalance.
Mm. Then you go looking for the reason.
Yeah, and there's a lack of sparkle, there's a lack of creativity. Something's not allowing that human being to live.
At the ages we're talking about, do you think school-based teams do that better than clubs?
No, I think it's all relative. Like I said in the first half of our interview, I think the school context suits some players and it doesn't suit others.
Yeah.
And I feel the same about the clubs. There's too much made of this school versus club thing. I think both, you know, we all want the same thing, which is the best for our children. And at the end of the day, I think it has to come down to a wise choice that's obviously made by the parent,
yep,
as to what's the best avenue for their child. And other people should stop weighing. You know, everybody's, yep, an expert. I mean, other people should stop weighing in on a decision that really, really needs to be made by the stakeholders, which are the parents.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, quite agree. And this this issue of the talented player really does rest heavily on parents, even for the most obsessive ones. It's no easy burden to carry, I suspect.
Oh no, you have to. The sacrifices you are going to be asking of your child will be ones that you will have to make.
Mm.
And we're talking about everything from financial to, yes, you know, personal.
Yes.
In much the same way that, you know, you're entering into a contract which you are a part of.
Yes, absolutely. Now, talented players, talented football players, do you see, as you see the children coming through here at Radford, do you see some essential gender differences in the way they develop? Let's kick it down a notch. It doesn't necessarily have to be to representative level, but...
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think there are. I mean, there's different patterns, is a word I like to use, because it's not as prescriptive of how the kids evolve.
Mm.
But no, you can vary. You can have a team at the under-16 girls level, which are just playing sport because they really, really enjoy it.
Mm.
And then the year follows, you can have a side that's, you know, very, very, if you like, mature and focused in their approach, that want to do the best and want to train hard and work really, really hard. So, no, I'm very, very hesitant to generalise, because every time that I've done that in the past, there's been exceptions to the rules.
Mm.
So my gut instinct is that no, I wouldn't. But you can look at what the studies in sort of like adolescent education are suggesting, and there's obviously a time where the girls are emotionally, yep, moving at a much greater and faster rate than the boys, and then the boys catch up, and there's,
yes,
those patterns can affect the sporting field, but there's always going to be exceptions to the rule.
Right. Well, I've noticed within junior football, there's a predilection to take girls and play them across in the boys' teams, and similarly in boys, to play them up levels, age levels higher, in the belief that this will match their perceived talent and assist their development. How do you feel about that?
It depends on the context. I've had very good experiences with girls playing in the males competition. It's, for want of a better word, toughen them up, sharpen them up in terms of speed on the ball. It's it's increased the pace at which they play the game and the rate of their skills develop. I think that's a separate issue to boys or girls or anybody really actually playing up an age, and I think you've got to take that on a case by case basis. But I can remember a time where people were doing that, so we end up getting to the point where so many people are doing that there's no point in having age groupings.
Well, yeah, that's really where my question is heading to.
You know, what's the point of having age groupings if you know everyone's playing up, down, around?
Yeah.
But I have coached some teams that have been quite advanced for their age and have done really, really well. And I would have to say there's very little purpose served in keeping them playing in that age group if they're going to keep winning and dominating all the time. The only way they're going to grow is to be challenged at their appropriate level of playing.
But it would, I guess you're also saying, implied there is, it has to be a very considered decision.
I think that's the thing with all of this. You've got to. I find it hard to see any wisdom in not dealing with things on a case by case basis.
Yep.
The second you start to make generalisations about anything to do with gender, age, ability, etc., you're going to run into huge problems if you start to work to formulas.
Mm.
And I think that's why we're in trouble with a lot of the way I think we approach junior sport, because everybody thinks that there's a formula that's going to magically work that's consistent for every given kid.
Thanks, George.
You're welcome.
And that was Pete talking to George Hoiker from Radford College. Pretty interesting stuff there that George had to say. Next week, Pete, you're catching up with Eddie Senatol from Futsal, talking about the Boomerangs, I understand.
Yes, indeed. Boomerangs FS, Futsal Sala, new club. They're going to be campaigning in the New South Wales Premier League, and they're looking for players. More of that next week.
Excellent stuff. And we've got about a minute or so just to wrap up. So have you got one more item for us?
Yeah, one that strikes from Capital Football, very definitely noteworthy. Check their website. You'll see they're inviting registrations of interest from players at the under 12 level. The intention is to pick a team, I understand a squad of about 18, to campaign in Korea in a competition. More detail to follow, but keep an eye on their website.
Good stuff. And I've got two pieces of news to finish with. Caitlin Munoz is out for the season for Canberra United. She's injured her knee. She's expected to be the assistant coach for Canberra United, though. And Eamon's asked me to point out that Madura Junior Soccer Club has now got on board, and they're now Madura Football Club. So congratulations, Madura. We'll finish on that note. Thanks very much for coming in, Pete. Thanks for Aaron for chipping in now and again. Thanks very much for helping out. Remember, if you go into the near post...
get there first.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.